Now, Jim, show this gentleman how you can dance and sing.
That's my attitude towards the Western powers. If you want to say there's no rules, fine. Don't go crying for your mummy when that comes.
America today finds herself in a unique situation. She's the only country in history in a position to become involved in a bloodless revolution.
If America does not respond creatively to the challenge to banish racism, some future historian will have to say that a great civilization died because it lacked the soul and commitment to make justice a reality for all men.
When a system doesn't work for the majority of the people, you gotta change the system.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. This is your brother Vladimir Dees. And welcome to the long advertised White Lives Matter episode. Apologize for the time lapse. That was not my intention, in fact. As I've pointed out many times before, I am presently, but not for always, a laborer. I work presently, but not for always, as a production. I actually, you know what's funny is, I don't even know what my title is. Production assembly handler, I think is what I'm technically called. I am on the bottom rung, presently, but not for always, of a major company who, requires my services to make the people who already have a lot of money at the top of the company a lot more money, while, giving us scraps and what have you, periodically, to sway their guilt and egos. But, just as I started planning on ramping up production a little bit for the end of the year push, I was told that I would be switching shifts. I was asked if I would switch shifts for an opportunity to participate in something and to do some work and what have you. And, I couldn't say no. I've been looking for opportunities to, make a little bit of a bigger splash. So, there we go. I got it. And, the last 2 weeks has been like walking around in a haze sometimes because, all of you understand, I think, and if you don't, it'll surprise me, but all of you understand, when you're doing something either labor intensive, which by the way, I'm not doing something very labor intensive, depends on where they put you in that type of work. I've done labor intensive work. The job that I did before this was very much labor intensive. It wasn't construction or anything. It was warehousing and production. But people underestimate, especially those who are called, the middle class. They underestimate what kind of real work actually does go on in those manufacturing places and what it takes to stay there. Just the energy that you have to expend to do that work. A lot of these people couldn't do it. A lot of these people wouldn't do it. And, not simply because the jobs are monotonous. Not simply because of that. But because you really have to have this resilient strength of character to put up with the psychological and emotional and spiritual abuse that goes on when you are in this society, which is so hierarchical, the lower rung. And being a black person, black being, on that lower rung, that means I am lower than those others. And they don't let me forget it. So it takes a lot to stay there, but like I said, presently, but not for always. Anyway, so I was doing that, and time got away from me. I don't know how many of you have ever switched shifts dramatically, but it does mess up your sleeping schedule for a minute. It does mess up your internal clocks, and it messed mine up. So here I am. The program, which you are about to hear, was recorded a while ago now, about a month ago, maybe a little bit more than that. And it is something that I think needs to be said. In fact, it might have been in October, late October, when I recorded that episode. Kind of got jostled when I recorded it. It just moved around in files a couple of times by itself, I swear. But it talks about why White Lives Matter is important and why it is actually needed, particularly for the same reason that many white conservatives say Black Lives Matter needs to be reversed onto the black community. This talks about that. Now, I want to be very careful with this introduction, because I don't want to give anything really away. Its message is powerful enough. And at the outset, I do want to say, it is not my intention to try to, as some people would say it, rescue the white community. And that is a very important distinction to make, that I do not want to rescue the white community or white society. And I say that because there's been some controversy in the black community about this. And the idea of not allowing karma to take place. Because black people, we've really stood in the way of white people getting their comeuppance. We've been trying to save and hold them away from the fire for about 100 years. And we keep begging the society to change. And every time we stand in the way, we get injured. And we get injured badly. We not only get injured by the karma that's supposed to hit white folks, but then white people react negatively towards us anyway, and often do us incredible harm and incredible damage. I look at World War I and World War II as karma. As Martin Luther King once said, you know, how did he say it? When you have misplaced values, you end up with guided missiles and misguided men. And when you put a lot of technical power into a group of or into the hands of a group of people who did not prove that they could get along with themselves, let alone the world, that they had respect enough for themselves, let alone the world, that they had respect enough to take care of the environment in which they lived, let alone to be able to handle taking care of the environment of the world. When you place that type of technology into the hands and that type of capability into the hands of a people who not only viewed the enslavement of those who they said they classified literally scientifically as different than them. That would be black people. That would be melanated people. That would be non-white people. But then their history is replete, is overflowing with evidence and references of enslaving their own people in demonstrations of brutality against their own people, and even to the days prior to that type of karma, that'd be World War I, World War II, the amount of enslavement that was occurring of white folks, it was a different type of enslavement. It was wage slavery. It was the feudal society rebranded. It wasn't the type of cattle and chattel enslavement of non-white people. But when you have that and you have the rationales that go along with that to make sure that wage slavery is morally acceptable and deemable, and we see this even up to the present day, you're going to have an incredible, the amount of karma that is going to have to be released either consistently and constantly or in huge, huge spurts, because the society, the people aren't made for consistent releasing of pressure. You're going to have these huge, huge conflicts which blow up and release all this pressure. And when that happens, a lot of people are going to die. And not only are a lot of people going to die, but major problems are going to spring up from that. And it's as a result of those conflicts, you are going to have one strong man replacing another strong man. And most likely, because of the society and its inability to deal with its contradictions, you're going to have more issues arrive, which that strong man is not only going to fail to deal with, but is going to place in stranglehold in a new system, which will then set the stage for whatever karmic debt release portion of cycle is going to kick in next time. World War I, World War II were part of those karmic debt cycles. The Depression, the Great Depression, was a huge one. That should have told white society, Europe society, Anglo economies all over the world to de-imperialize and to reform now. They didn't do that. They didn't listen. They did not listen. And so, well, we've seen what happened after World War II. That was the anti-liberation stuff. That was the anti-communist stuff. This is what I'm talking about when I say the problem of the new system is going to be on display during World War II. Fascism, which is really just, it's capitalism brought to its logical conclusion. It is capitalism brought to its logical conclusion. It's also, in the words of Francis Cress Welsing, it is also racism in action. Because both capitalism and racism was very much a part of Nazi Germany and Mussolini's Italy. And if you look at the fascist governments that the United States placed into other countries after World War II, all of the dictatorships that they used to call right-wing, these were all fascist dictatorships. They were very much corporatized, and they were very much racist. The if you look at them, though, both of those strands are very present in them. So, the fact that what World War II should have said to Anglo economies all over the world is the so-called democratic veneer which they're wearing is a lie, and they have to reconcile that. All the countries were fascist in some way. All of them. I don't believe Anglo countries have any capabilities but being fascistic in some way or another, because that is what is traditional in their society. Even though China is called a fascist society, or excuse me, it's called a communist society, it is not a communist society. It is a quintessential fascist society. It is run from the top down. The idea and the notion of it being a people's republic is absolutely bogus. It's not. And even the Soviet was the same thing. It is traditional for these people to run and operate this way. What it should have said, and the United States has been running, and so hasn't Europe, they've been running from this destiny because they know now that they messed up. But what it should have said to them was, we need to make sure that democracy is real. Because World War II, as even Dr. King pointed out, that was kind of a warning. That was a warning. If you keep going down this capitalistic road, this war is going to pale in comparison to what is going to come. A couple of years ago, I saw a movie, and there was a speech in it called The Adjustment Bureau. And Leonardo DiCaprio is in the movie, if you've never seen it. And he ends up discovering that there's this secret group of people who are somewhat kind of running the world, but they're not really running the world. They're just helping guide it in certain ways, and it's really an interesting movie. It's about free will and using free will, which is really a good thing to talk about. But when he finally gets to a point, he's trying to convince them to let him do something that he wants to do, and they keep telling him that he can't do it. They don't really give him a reason except for, you know, you just can't do it because that's the major plan. So he disobeys them, of course. It's Hollywood. And they call in their big guns, and I don't mean literally guns this time. No, they mean the guy who's been doing it for, you know, 150, 200, 300 years. These guys are like angels, so they live forever. But, so he, you know, goes to talk to Leonardo DiCaprio, and in this brilliant scene, which they actually edited part of it, and I'm curious to know what they edited out, because it really is a good scene. They talk about free will. And this older man says, what, free will? You really don't have free will. You have, like, minor choices that you can make, but the major stuff, we've let you take care of that before. Now, when he said that, he was very specific. He mentioned the Roman Empire, he mentioned several other European societies, and then he said, you know, after World War II, we stepped in to make sure that you didn't do anything that even we couldn't save you from or correct. And this is the karma that I'm talking about. So I'm not trying to, you know, step in front of that. And this is important because white folks, I need you to understand something. And I need you to understand it altogether. As a black man, I hear constantly that black people don't take responsibility for their actions and the consequences which come from those actions. Everywhere I turn, that is what I get to hear about. Everyone's trying to teach black people to have more responsibility. The funniest thing is, those that I know who do not take responsibility for the actions, not only of themselves, but their communities and their leaders, and always refuse to do this, and always played the dummy, don't ever know that this was going to be the consequences of what that, they're always white people. Always. All day long, every day. Didn't know that what was going to happen in Iraq was going to happen. Didn't know that what was going to happen in Libya was going to happen. All of this stuff. Didn't know that black people were being locked away for years and for doing nothing. Didn't know that. Didn't know that. Didn't know that drugs were a major concern and problem until white people started getting hooked on opioids. Didn't know that. Mm-mm. Didn't know the sociological ramifications of slavery. Well, you really probably somewhat didn't know that, but have never tried to fix that either. I've never tried to fix it either. So it's time to take responsibility. You don't want black people interfering in the control of the world. You don't want black people interfering in the destiny of the planet unless we are doing it underneath your guidelines and your guidance. Well, one, you're being deposed as we speak, so that's not really a, you know, you kind of flummox that one because you're handing it right over to the Chinese. And they too, they're going to have an even shorter leash. Don't think that is just on you. Because the Chinese think their history protects them. Their history, they're another one. They fail to understand the karma. Their history is not going to protect them on this. They were able to be subjugated by you because they had subjugated the original people who had lived there. And like in India, where the subjugation is constant and consistent, which is now in turmoil, which was subjugated also by the British. All of this is karma. And if China does not do right by Africa, meaning at the time when they are pressured to do so, this is why, by the way, they're locking God out, because they don't want to hear what they need to be doing in the next 100 years. Part of it is prepping Africa to stand on its own, but Africa is the heartbeat of this country, of this world. Africa is to be free of any influence. And if China does not allow Africa to be free, they better look at the history, because God, the judgment on America was bad, but America is a child. America is like 5 or 8 years old compared to China. China after its subjugation of the people who had always been there. China is 5,000, 6,000, 7,000 years old after that subjugation. China is literally, if in a metaphorical sense, China is like in their mid-40s compared to the United States. So if they don't do right by Africa, the karma is going to be much worse for them. Because they hold themselves out to be better than the United States. I've said this many times before, and I'll say it again. There is a spiritual aspect to all of this. Many of us don't want to admit it. Many of us don't want to look at it because, well, you know, these are just things that are happening. No, ladies and gentlemen, these are not just things that are happening. There are currents that are happening. The planet is realigning itself for the benefit of those who were originally here. Now, for the people who are here, who do right, who are in tune with the great cosmic mother and the great order, you're going to be fine and you're going to be prosperous and you're going to live in harmony and all of this other stuff. But if you're not, you better change your life because the plane is adjusting itself to make things much more difficult until the vibratory frequencies, which are knocking it off its axis, are ceased. Now, I know this is not your typical class war labor podcast, a concept, or what have you. I don't want it to be. And the reason why is because we've graduated from the times of, oh, well, it's all about strikes. It's all about empowering people to be laborers who know their rights and who want to form unions. And no, we still need to do all that. Don't get me wrong, but there is something bigger. People need to understand that growing the spirit so the soul will have a place to call home is the most important part of the work that we need to do now. And many people think they have the answers. And I mean this. Many people think they have the answers. I don't have all the answers. I don't even pretend to have all the answers. I don't have one-fifth of the answers, one-tenth of the answers. But what I do know is this. The stuff that I'm telling you, that I'm giving to you, which is outside of the ordinary, I do it because these are the things that are missing from the conversation. And when I say the conversation, I literally mean we are talking about things that are devoid of any spirit concept. We talk about this world as if it is not spirit and energy, as if it doesn't respond to what we say and what we do. We talk about this world as if we have no stake in it, as if we have no responsibility to it. We talk about this world as if we aren't even in it. We talk about this world as if we aren't even in it. And we are. We are in it. We are not only in it, but we are part of it. And we run it. Now, yes, you know, I was listening to this this woman who was delivering a sermon to black Americans, it had to be older because it talked about Barack Obama first getting into office and the hate that he received when he got there. Yes, for white people, you got to understand, your day of ruling is almost over. And even for the Chinese. The Chinese think that they're about to have the next 2,000 years. They're not. They think they're going to have the next 200 years. They're not. As soon as it becomes clear what their motives are, that'll determine how long their prosperity and their reign of influence will last. And that's the next 25 years for them. Just like the United States, when it became clear what their intentions were, the United States had from 1914 to around 1944, 45, so about 25 years, or excuse me, about 30 years, to really determine and showcase what they were going to be doing. So a little bit over 30 years for the United States. And then they were given a buffer, like I imagine China will be. So then they were given a 15-year buffer, 10 to 15-year buffer, where they were shown the signs that, look, you got to turn back. You can't go down this way. You cannot go down this way. Turn back. That was the unrest all over the world. That was the messiahs appearing all over the world, you know, leading their people to liberation, talking about new systems, new orders, new ways of living, new ways of conceiving life, new ways of conceiving work. All of that came about in the 1950s and the 1960s, warning the United States to become the head of this. The United States didn't listen. What happened? The United States economy went in the toilet, and that was the 1970s. That told the United States that the party was over. Okay, you want to take this route? We're going to break the backbone of your power, just like Dr. King warned them of. And that's what you've been seeing ever since. China, as soon as it becomes evident what their intentions are, will go through the same process. I said it when I first started publishing this podcast. I would constantly, consistently say, if you look at where China was 5 years ago, and you look at where the United States was 100-plus years ago, I'm talking everything, you know, down from the cities that were horrible, horribly polluted, overcrowdedness, large-scale factories that were also overcrowded, suicides, mutilations, chemicals being used in to burn, all kinds of, chemicals being used and burning the skin, and all kinds of massive projects that were getting done quickly, overdevelopment happening rapidly. All of this stuff was what the United States was going through. That was 100 years ago. I want you to think about, it took China, and everyone's just saying, oh, it's because, you know, they're an older civilization, so they know more. No, 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 no. Time is speeding up. Time is speeding up. It took China about 30 years, 20 years, definitely. I'd say 20 years because it was the mid-70s when they started that upswing, so about 75-ish. Actually, a little bit earlier because it started with Nixon's trip to China. And then throughout the 80s and the 90s, you know, they were just building the foundation. And then capitalism was just taking off between the mid-90s and through the early 20s, and then up to now. Or the early 2000s and then up to now. So 20 years on top of that. This is the same trajectory the United States went on. The difference was the United States took about 60 years to do it. The North was more industrialized than the South, of course. And then they did the rapid industrialization after the Civil War. It took about 40 years to really rapidly industrialize, maybe 50. So China's done it in about half the time, and for more people. China will make a decision in the next 20 to 25 years. They're already making a decision, truthfully, of what their true intentions will be for the planet. And I can already tell you, I think I already know what their intentions are going to be. And they're, you know, they'll have to rule that karma just like the United States did. Africa is to be free. So, you know, in closing, you know, we got to keep these things in mind. For white folks who are listening to this, you know, you hear me say that your time of rulership is over. It's the truth, unfortunately, for you. So why should you care? One, because everything is cyclical. And there will come a time, right now, your ruling class knows that their time is up. This is why they're putting all of their money and their influence into not only China, but into Africa, into South America, because they know where the winds are going. They're just not telling you that. That's the only difference. They're just not telling you that. They ain't trying to save the United States anymore. This is why it's important that you understand that this stuff is cyclical now, because 100 years ago, a little bit over 100 years ago, I'm sorry, it was 100 years ago, the United States started a crackdown on the labor movement. And after World War I, the United States went headlong into trying to crack down on the labor union, the labor unions. And they really went after, and actually during World War I, they went after the most progressive and radical labor unionists who were calling for labor unions not only to organize workers who worked in corporations, but they were calling for these people to take over the reins of production. And they went after these people. The vision that so many of these people had, and this is a dangerous vision right now, but it's a vision that many white people are not prepared to understand the value of. Because many of you don't want to really take responsibility for your life. And I've said this before, you don't want to take responsibility for your life. The vision that these people had, and this vision came back up during the Great Depression. Everybody wonders why their grandparents, great-grandparents, thought highly of the Great Depression. Black people thought good about the Great Depression, but, you know, we were often the ones who were getting murdered and stuff when white people became frustrated. So, you know, it was good and bad. But for white people, the Great Depression represented a lot of hope because a lot of the radical tendencies that had to get suppressed after World War I during the, was it the Yellow Scare then? I can't remember. There was another color scare that happened, which related to, it wasn't Red Scare. It was, they had to suppress those radical tendencies. So in the 30s, all of those radical tendencies came back up. And the idea, which I will share, which was really floating, and this was not a new concept, even in the mid-19-teens. This was from the earliest days of union organizing in the 1800s, which, by the way, you know, unions go back to Europe. Some of the earliest unioners were not American. They were European transplants to America. I know Europeans are the ones even who call themselves American, but they were new immigrants to America, and they were the ones who brought over the concept of, yo, you guys are getting screwed, you need to unionize. The idea that was floated then, and it was floated in the mid-19-teens, it was floated in the 30s, was that the unions would own the means of production. And then the unions would own, control the economy. Now, they didn't say politics in the beginning. Some people said politics in the beginning. But a lot of the unioners said, no. We have a tradition in Europe of shops that are run by journeymen, and, you know, you have the apprentice apparatus and what have you. And it works well. Some of the best jobs are run that way. Heck, in the start of the United States, many of the early companies were cooperatives. And they were large cooperatives. Granted, you know, only about 10 or 12 people, but they were still large cooperatives. So this was the vision. The vision was of populism. And populism, which, you know, you can always tell when a word is philosophically dangerous. Because the enemies of that word, and I'm talking now about morals, this does not work with evil. So, because evil people will try to flip this. But no, this does not work with evil. This is straight up, this is what the devil does to the Bible, to use a theological term. You can tell when a word is philosophically dangerous because they will co-opt it and invert it. And they will spend a lot of time inverting it. Because they know astrologically, they know energetically that that word's impact is rising to the surface. That's what they know. So the people who are the most frightened of it will invert it. Populism is a great example of that, because populism, if you look it up, this bull crap about, and I've said it before, and I know people, you know, I get emails periodically with people saying, well, you repeat yourself so much. And I write back to them, yes, I do, because you don't hear me. Well, if I'm telling you repeat yourself, then I hear you. I'm glad you do. Share the podcast. Maybe 100 million people will hear you, will hear this. And it'll change the minds of them. Populism is not and cannot be right-winged. It is impossible. The origins of populism say it is impossible. Populism is the political arm to a labor union run economy. Oh, it's socialism. Wrong. See, socialism takes its cue just like capitalism. Socialism and capitalism are kind of diametrically opposed, but they're in the same boat. Socialism, just like capitalism, says that it is in effect all throughout the society. All throughout to society, which is why so many people, and I actually got confused with this, people would say, well, you know, socialism is scientific. And so if we just look at everything through the lens of science, then we're great. And I'd look at it and say, that's stupid. Why would you do that? You can't. Science doesn't necessitate morality. In fact, science sometimes can promote immorality. But that is because socialism is a catch-all. Now, it is based on systems that are indigenous and come from Africa and South America and Native American. It's based off of that, which it's when you use it that way, and this is, again, the danger of a word, it is inverted. When you go to those places, the spiritual takes root. So spiritualism is all throughout it. It is not separated. Science doesn't mitigate everything. Spirituality does. So in a society where everything has to be fragmented, populism is the political arm to a labor union run economy. So one might call this kind of a commonwealth concept. And so these words have been co-opted because of the power of them. And they're being brought up now because if the baseline isn't set for them right now, people will start to use them for what they originally are meant for. This is why we're also being pushed down the road of the Red Scare. Oh, Russia, Russia, which is just code word for communists, socialists, Bernie Sanders. Young people are talking about socialism more than ever. Young people are talking about cooperatives more than ever. Young people are talking about realigning this society for the first time in 40, 50 years. And what's happening? The same thing that happened then. The older generation is trying to stand in their way. So that's why all of this is happening. That is why all of this is happening. And the karmic debt, which is beginning to be felt on the United States, will manifest outwardly around them. And it will be, ultimately, their response to the events, which will be, hopefully, the saving grace to the United States. Right now, it's not looking that way. Why? Because too many are still drinking from the bitter waters being fed to them by the elite, who is trying to set up the foundation for a very violent fall to the United States. But you can't let them. You can't let them. And so it's vital that the responsibility to clean up the mess, you know, think about Bruce Almighty. It is the responsibility of white folks, and I hate to say it, it's going to fall to this newer generation, to clean up the mess that their parents made. Recognize, socialism is not bad. Communism isn't bad. It's what you do with it. if communism for you starts off with the concept of authoritative structuring, top-down structuring, then yes, it's going to become bad. If socialism starts out for you from the scientific realm, then yeah, you're going to have some issues. Socialism, if you start off socialism and communism with the idea of you need humanism, so you're going to place people first, you're going to design a structure which is going to give to people everything that they need to be prosperous. Now, right-wingers would say, you said give, that means they're not going to have to work for it. Oh, wow, wow, wow. Most of these people, by the way, have tons of money and don't need to work a day in their lives again. But let's be clear about this give situation. There are certain things that people need to be not only successful in life, but that will allow them to be complete human beings. This nonsense of making people work for things that are needed is insane. Now, does that mean that you shouldn't have to pay for food? It depends. Are you paying for locally grown food, which everybody has decided that they would grow and reap a benefit from? Maybe you don't pay for that. Maybe you don't. Are you paying for foods that are shipped across state lines? Okay, you're probably going to have to pay a little something for that because it has to be transported. Are you paying for foods that are brought in from overseas? You are definitely going to have to pay something for that. Why? Because they're brought in from overseas. But to talk about subsidies as if they're bad, as if giving people free things isn't what the government does anyway, is juvenile. And it's not even juvenile, it's delusional. The government gives away billions of dollars to rich people. The same conservatives talking about, oh, well, we can't do anything for regular people. Oh, you can't give anything to them. They say nothing about giving anything to rich people. Oh, well, they're the job creators. Really? 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 Show me one rich person that has ever created a job. Actually, if you talk to them, they'll say the market did it. This nebulous thing that doesn't actually exist. But I set the environment for it. Oh, they're gods now, by the way. Anyway, try not to get off on that. Because you're going to be hearing a lot about that in the coming weeks. There's entitlements, quote, entitlements. It's entitlements when it's poor people. It's, you know, seeding entrepreneurial spiritual stuff once when it's rich people. But they're going to be tackling that next now that they've screwed everybody on taxes. And trust me, I've heard so many people talk about this tax thing. It's mind-blowing. Anyway, if you start with the human factor first, with communism and socialism, if you start with the spiritual, or if you continue with the spiritual factor next, I'm not talking religion. I'm talking about there are universal principles that are in operation in every religion and spiritual practice you can point to. If you start with that next, you change the dynamics of communism and socialism. Capitalism, people have said, well, you know, you could do the same thing for capitalism. I don't believe it. And the reason why I don't believe it is because capitalism to me is just rebranded feudalism. Capitalism is rebranded feudalism. When you look at the history of how capitalism, quote, came about, it didn't really come about. It just naturally kind of evolved. There was a little bit of oppression and strong-arm tactics to get people into the system at first. But it was only after those people had really started feeling like they had liberated themselves from the old feudal system people were lazy. And by people, I mean the rich. The rich are pretty lazy. They are. They don't want to tell you that. They're going to tell you you are lazy. But they're really lazy. They don't want to do things for themselves. They want to feel like they're gods again. But capitalism does not have, you can't, its history is too tied together with feudalism. Its history is too tied together with conquering and misery, subjugation, and what have you. You can't reform that. It's not, the genetic code is too ingrained. In order to literally take out the bad portions, you're going to have to chemically deconstruct it, take out what was there, and then hope what is left is viable. So I don't believe capitalism can be and will be compatible with humanism. We've tried that. In fact, for most of the early years of my life, there was this notion of capitalism being, or the result that we were in during that time period, that was the 80s and the early 90s, was the result of kind of this fairness coming about in capitalism. When in fact we know that's just bullocks, that wasn't true. So I don't believe capitalism is in the realm, and I think most capitalists would admit that too. That's why the system is evolving into something else. Because capitalism has had its day, and now we need to choose to do something else. The question is, what will we choose? I'm going to call this part one of White Lives Matter. I didn't expect to go on like this. My intention was about 15 minutes, but about 10 minutes in, looked at the sheet, looked at what I wanted to say, and then, kind of the ancestors kind of stepped in and said, yep, you're going for about 45 minutes today, so, you might want to get comfortable. You might want to get comfortable. So I'm going to call this part one, and I'm thinking right now that I want to wrap it up by just saying that there is a New Age movement. I'm not a fan particularly, but it's a New Age movement, and it purports to be spiritually sound and spiritually concrete. There is a desperate need for people to understand, for white folks to understand particularly, that their only saving grace is becoming more spiritual and understanding what it means. You can't wear the garments. You just can't wear the garments, which too many people do. You have to connect with the overarching energies of this world and not be afraid of those energies, because you're going to be displaced once you do it. And I mean that. And I mean that. And that means stepping outside of yourself and taking on empathy and all this other stuff. You start to really get a soul. And by soul, I mean soul boost for you, but you do. Now, many people will hear that and say, wait a minute, are you saying we don't have souls? Are you saying we don't? No. This society promotes depressing the soul force. This society promotes shutting out the soul light. And I've seen, I remember my parents telling me that there's vantage points to being an adult. And I have watched kids I've watched white children who at 6 and 7 have just this gorgeous light. And you can see it, and you can see morality and consciousness taking form in them. I see them at 16 and 18, and they don't have that light anymore. They don't have that light anymore. It's been repressed. And I know why. I went to school in a predominantly white school. It's the same reason why black people do it. Because the world makes you ashamed of having a soul. So you repress it. What I'm saying now is my European-American friends, my European friends, Anglo friends all across the world, you have to get connected. It's not going to be enough to just go and wear the garments. You have to bring that soul force back up. If you cannot do it, learn. If you will not do it, I can't help you. But that's where we're at. White lives mattering for you is a challenge, and we'll talk about that in part two. On the one hand, it is the spiritual move. You got to do that. You got to get your soul light up. And you have to identify those around you without any souls. Because there are those. There are those. You know, this is a spiritual conversation now. This isn't, oh, well, you identify them so we can exterminate them. Ha, 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 ha. No. It's none of that. But I'm working on reality right now, ladies and gentlemen, and you got to work on reality. As you start getting your soul force up, you start getting your soul light up, you will start noticing differences in people and how you interact with them. And you'll also start noticing that you can see into a person's soul. And many times, you can see where their soul should be and isn't. That's what I'm talking about. So be ready for that. This was a wide range of conversation, but I'm calling it part one. So this is kind of an introductory kind of thing, you know. Can't wait to show the next one to you. That will be coming. This is... Wow, man. Wow. I should just listen, you know. Ancestors told me it's going to be 45 minutes, and I said, no, I'm going to be 15. And here we are an hour later. So this is your brother, Vimer Deese. You know, if you have any questions, comments, concerns, maybe you want to yell at me for this one because, hey, it was only supposed to be an introduction, and you haven't even played the real one yet. What's wrong with you? I understand your frustration. I get it. But this is what was needed. So, yeah, if you have any questions, comments, concerns, you know, let me know. All right. You know, contact me, email address, blah, blah, blah. This is your brother, Vimer Deese. Till the next time, check me out. By the way, as always, website coming soon, new podcast coming soon, all this good stuff coming soon. You know, can't wait to show you Labor of Love coming up. Peace. There's a shadow on the faces of the men who sent the guns to the wars that are fought in places where their business interest runs. On the radio, talk shows, and the TV, you hear one thing again and again: how the USA stands for freedom, and we come to the aid of a friend. But who are the ones that we call our friends? These governments killing their own, or the people who finally can't take anymore, and they pick up a gun or a brick or a stone. And there are lies in the balance. We'll be right back.